As loudly as a thunderstorm under the bed, but as softly as two soufflés colliding, past and present ran into one another. They contained a lot of people.
What's this? Dean?
Yes, you're not the Dean.
How dare you say that? Who are you?
Walk! Stone, the cows, there's a monkey in here.
No, I didn't say that. He said that.
Arch-Chancellor?
Yes?
Yes?
What? How many of you are there?
The darkness became a deep purple, shading to violet.
Will you all stop shouting and listen to me?
To Rincewind's amazement, they did.
Look, the walls are getting closer. This place is trying not to exist.
And having done his duty to the community, he turned and ran over the shaking rock floor. After a couple of seconds, the luggage passed him, which was always a bad sign. He heard the voices behind him. Wizards had a hard job accepting the term clear and present danger. They liked the kind you could argue about. But there is something about a rapidly descending ceiling that intrudes into the awareness of even the most quarrelsome.
I'll save you, Mrs. Whitlow.
Up the tunnel.
How fast are those walls closing in, would you say?
Shut up and run!
Now Rincewind was passed by a large, red, furry kangaroo. The librarian's erratic morphism, having briefly turned him into a red stalactite, as an obviously successful shape for surviving in caves, had finally taken on board the fact that it would make for a terminally lengthy survival in a cave that was rapidly getting smaller, and had flipped into a local morphic field built for speed. Man, luggage, and kangaroo piled through the hole into the cellar and ended in a heap against the opposite side. There was a rumbling behind them, and wizards and women were fired out into the cellar with some speed, several of them landing on Rincewind. Behind the wall, the rock groaned and creaked, expelling these alien things in what Rincewind thought was a geological chunder. Something flew out of the hole and hit him on the ear, but this was only a minor problem compared to the meat pie, which came out trailing mushy peas and tomato sauce and hit him in the mouth. It wasn't actually all that bad. The ability to ask questions like, "Where am I and who is the I that is asking?" is one of the things that distinguishes mankind from, say, cuttlefish. Although, of course, it's not the most obvious thing, and there are, in fact, some beguiling similarities, particularly the tendency to try to hide behind a big cloud of ink in difficult situations. The wizards from Unseen University, being perhaps the intellectual cream, or certainly the cerebral yogurt of their generation, passed through this stage within minutes. Wizards are very adept at certain ideas. One minute you're arguing over the shape of a duck's head, and the next there are people telling you you've been inside a rock for thousands of years because time goes slower on the inside. This presents no great problem for a man who has found his way to the lavatory at Unseen University, the one on the first floor with the curious gravitational anomaly. But there were more important questions as they sat around the table in BU.
"Is there anything to eat?" said Rid Cully.
"It's the middle of the night, sir."
"You mean we missed dinner?"
"Thousands of years of dinners, Arch-Chancellor."
"Really?
Better start catching up then, Mr. Stibbons.
Still, nice little place you've got here, Arch-Chancellor."
Rid Cully pronounced the word very carefully in order to accentuate the lowercase a. Arch-Chancellor Rincewind gave him a fraternal nod.
"Thank you.
For a colony, of course. I dare say you do your best."
"Why, thank you, Mustrum. I'd be happy to show you our tower later on."
"No, it does look rather small."
"So people say."
"Rincewind. Rincewind? Name rings a faint bell," said Rid Cully.
"We came looking for Rincewind, Arch-Chancellor," said Ponder patiently.
"Is he? Done well for himself, then. Fresh air made a man of him, I see."
"No, sir. Ours is the skinny one with the bad beard and the floppy hat, sir. You remember the one sitting over there?"
Rincewind raised a hand diffidently.
Me, he said.
Rid Cully sniffed.
"Fair enough. What's that thing you're playing with, man?"
Rincewind held up the bull roarer.
"It came with you out of the cave," he said. "What were you doing with it?"
"Oh, some toy the librarian found," said Ponder.
"All sorted out, then," said Rid Cully. "I say, this beer's good, isn't it? Very drinkable. Yes, I'm sure there's a lot we can learn from one another, Arch-Chancellor. You from us rather more than us from you, of course. Perhaps we could set up a student exchange, that sort of thing.
Good idea.
You can have 6 of mine in exchange for a decent lawnmower. Ours is broken.
The Arch-Chancellor is trying to say that getting back might be rather hard, sir, said Ponder. Apparently things ought to have changed now we're here, but they haven't.
Your Inswins seem to think that bringing you blokes over here would make it rain, said Bill, but it hasn't.
Hrum, hrum, hrum.
Oh, do stop playing with that thing, Rincewind, said Ridcully.
Well, Bill, it's obvious, isn't it? As more experienced wizards than you, we naturally know plenty of ways of making it rain. No problem there.
Vroom, vroom, vroom.
Look, lad, take that thing outside, will you?
The librarian was sitting at the top of the tin tower with a leaf over his head.
Something odd, see? Said Rincewind, dangling the bullroarer from its string. I've only got to wiggle my hand a bit and it swings right round.
Ooh!
The librarian sneezed.
Ooh!
There, now you're some sort of large bird, said Rincewind. You are in a bad way, aren't you? Still, once I tell them your name...
The librarian changed shape and moved fast. There was a very short period of time in which a lot happened.
Ah, said Rincewind calmly when it seemed to be over. Well, let us start with what we know. I can't see. The reason I can't see is that my robe is hanging over my eyes. From this I can deduce that I am upside down. You are gripping my ankles. Correction, one ankle. So obviously you are holding me upside down. We are at the top of the tower. This means...
He fell silent.
All right, let's start again, he said. Let's start by me not telling anyone your name.
The librarian let go. Rincewind dropped a few inches onto the planks of the tower.
You know, that was a really mean trick you just did, he said.
Oh,
we'll say no more about it, shall we?
Rincewind looked up at the big empty sky. It ought to be raining. He'd done everything he was supposed to do, hadn't he? And all that had happened was that the faculty of UU was down there being condescending about everything. It wasn't even as if they could do a rain-making spell. For one of those to work, you needed some rain around to start with. In fact, it was prudent to make sure that some heavy-looking clouds were being blown in your direction. And if it wasn't raining, then probably those terrible currents they talked about were still around too. It wasn't a bad country. They were big on hats. They were big on big hats. He could save up and buy a farm on the Never Never and watch sheep. After all, they fed themselves and they made more sheep. All you had to do was pick the wool off occasionally. The luggage had probably settled down to being a sheepdog. Except that there wasn't any more water. No more sheep, no more farms. Mad and Crocodile Crocodile, the lovely ladies Darlene and Letitia, Remorse and his horses. All those people had shown him how to find the things you could eat without throwing up too often. All... drying up and blowing away. Him, too.
Good day.
Ooh.
Oh, no, Rincewind moaned.
Throat a bit parched.
Look, you're not supposed to...
It's all right. I have an appointment down in the city. There's been a fight over the last bottle of beer. However, let me assure you of my personal attention at all times.
Well, thank you. When it's time to stop living, I will certainly make death my number one choice.
Death faded.
The cheek of him. Turning up like that. We're not dead yet, shouted Rincewind to the burning sky. There's lots we could do. If we could get to the hub, we could cut loose a big iceberg and tow it here, and that'd give us plenty of water. If we could get to the hub. Where there's hope, there's life, I'll have you know. I'll find a way. Somewhere there's a way of making rain.
Death had gone.
Rincewind swung the bullroarer menacingly. And don't come back!
Ooh!
The librarian gripped Rincewind's arm and sniffed the air. Then Rincewind caught the smell, too. Rincewind spoke a fairly primitive language, and it had no word for that smell you get after rain, other than that smell you get after rain. Anyone trying to describe the smell would have to flounder among words like moisture, heat, vapour, and with a following wind, exhalation. Nevertheless, there was the smell you get after rain. In this burning land, it was like a brief jewel in the air. Rincewind whirled the piece of wood again. It made noise out of all proportion to the movement, and there was that smell again. He turned it over. It was still just a wooden oval. There weren't any markings on it. He gripped the end of the string and whirled the thing experimentally a few more times. "Did you notice that when it did this," he began. It wouldn't stop. He couldn't lower his arm. "I think it wants to be spun," he said. "Ooh! You think I should? Ooh! That's very helpful. Ooh!" The librarian ducked. Rincewind spun. He couldn't see the wood now because the string was getting longer with each turn. A blur curved through the air some way from the tower, getting further away with each spin. The sound of it was a long, drawn-out drone. When it was well out over the city, it exploded in a thunderclap. But something still whirled on the end of the line, like a tight silver cloud, throwing out a trail of white particles that made a spiral that sped out wider and wider. The librarian was flat on his face with his hands over his head. Air roared up the side of the tower, carrying dust, wind, heat, and budgerigars. Rincewind's robe flapped around his chin. Letting go was unthinkable. He wasn't even sure if he could, until it wanted him to. Thin as smoke now, the spiral drifted out into the heat haze. And out over the red desert, and the unheeding kangaroos, and as the tail of it flew out over the coast and into the wall of storms, the warring airs melted peacefully together. The clouds stopped their stately spin around the last continent, boiled up in confusion and thunderheads, reversed their direction, and began to fall inwards. And the string whipped out of Rincewind's hand, stinging his fingers. The bull roarer flew away, and he didn't see it fall. This may have been because he was still pirouetting, but at last gravity overcame momentum and he fell full length on the boards. "Oh, I think my feet have caught fire," he muttered. The dead heat hung on the land like a shroud. Clancy, the stockman, wiped the sweat off his brow very thoroughly and wrung out the rag into an empty jam tin. The way things were going, he'd be glad of it. Then, carrying the tin with care, he climbed back down the windmill's ladder. "The war's fine, boss. There's just no bloody water," he said. Remorse shook his head. "Look at them horses," he said. "Look at the way they're lying down, will you? That's not good. This is it, Clancy. We've battled through thick and thin, and this is too thick altogether by half. We may as well cut their poor bloody throats for the meat that's on them." A gust of wind took his hat off for him and blew a lash of scent across the wilted mulga bushes. A horse raised his head. Clouds were pouring across the sky, rolling and boiling across each other like waves on a beach, so black that in the middle they were blue, lit by occasional flashes. "What the hell's that?" said Clancy. The horse stood up awkwardly and stumbled to the rusted trough under the windmill. Under the clouds, dragging across the land, the air shimmered silver. Something hit Remorse's head. He looked down. Something went plop in the red dust by his boot, leaving a little crater. "That is water, Clancy," he said. "It's bloody water dropping out of the bloody sky." They stared at one another with their mouths open, as around them the storm hit and the animals stirred and the red dust turned into mud which spattered them up to their waists. This was no ordinary rainstorm. This was the wet. As Clancy said later, the second best bloody thing that happened that day was that they were near high ground. The best bloody thing was that with all the corks on their hats, they were able to find the bloody things later on. There'd been a debate about having this year's regatta in Didja Bring a Beer along, given the drought. But it was a tradition. A lot of people came into town for it. Besides, the organisers had discussed it long and hard all the previous evening in the bar of the Pastoral Hotel and had concluded that no worries, she'll be right. There were classes for boats pulled by camels, boats optimistically propelled by sails, and a high spot of the event, skiffs propelled by the simple expedient of the crew cutting the bottoms out, gripping the sides, and running like hell. It always got a good laugh. It was while two teams were trotting upriver in the semi-final that the spectators noticed the black cloud pouring over Semaphore Hill like boiling jam.
"Bushfire," said someone.
"Bushfire'd be white. Come on."
That was the thing about fire. If you saw one, everyone went to put it out. Fire spread like wildfire. But as they turned away, there was a scream from the riverbed. The teams rounded the bend neck and neck, carrying their boats at record-breaking speed. They reached the slipway, collided in their efforts to get up, made it to the top, locked together, and collapsed in splinters and screams.
"Stop the regatta!" panted one of the coxes. The river! The river!"
But by then everyone could see it. Around the bend, travelling slowly because it was pushing in front of it a huge log jam of bushes, carts, rocks, and trees, was the flood. It thundered past, and the mobile dam slid on, scything the river bottom free of all obstruction. Behind it, foaming water filled the river from bank to bank. They cancelled the regatta. A river full of water made a mockery of the whole idea. The university's gates had burst open, and now the angry mob was in the grounds and hammering on the walls. Above the din, the wizard searched feverishly through the books.
"Well, have you got something like Maxwell's impressive separator?" said Ridcully.
"What's that do?"
said Arch-Chancellor Rincewind.
"Unmixes two things, like sugar and sand, for example. Uses Nanny's demons."
"Nano-demons, possibly," murmured Ponder wearily.
"Oh, like Bonza Charlie's Butte Sith. Yeah, we got that."
"Ah, parallel evolution. Fine, dig it out, man." Arch-Chancellor Rincewind nodded at one of the wizards and then broke into a grin.
"Are you thinking about it working on salt?" he said.
"Exactly. One spell, one bucket of seawater, no more problem."
That's not exactly true," said Ponder Stibbons.
"Sounds perfect to me, man."
"It takes a great deal of magic, sir, and the demons take about a fortnight per pint, sir."
"Ah, a significant point, Mr. Stibbons."
"Yes, sir."
"However, just because it wouldn't work does not mean it was a bad idea. I wish they'd stop that shouting."
The shouting outside stopped.
"Perhaps they heard you, sir," said Ponder.
"Bang, bang, bang."
"Are they throwing stuff onto the roof?" said Arch-Chancellor Rincewind.
"No, that's probably just rain," said Ridcully. "Now, I suppose you've tried evaporating..."
He realized that no one was listening. Everyone was looking up. Now the individual thuds had merged into a steady hammering, and from outside came the sound of wild cheering. The wizards struggled in the doorway and finally fought their way outside, where water was pouring off the roof in a solid sheet and cutting a channel in the lawn. Arch-Chancellor Rincewind stopped abruptly and reached out to the water like a man not sure if the stove is hot.
"Out of the sky?" he said.
He pushed his way out through the liquid curtain. Then he took off his hat and held it upside down to catch the rain. The crowd had filled the university grounds and spilled out into the surrounding streets. Every face was turned upwards.
"And those dark things?" Arch-Chancellor Rincewind called out.
"They are the clouds, Arch-Chancellor. There's a hell of a lot of them."
There were. They piled up over the tower in an enormous, spreading black thunderhead. A couple of people looked down long enough to see the group of soaked wizards, and there were some cheers. And suddenly, they were the new centre of attention, and being picked up and carried shoulder high.
"They think we did it!"
shouted Arch-Chancellor Rincewind as he was borne aloft.
"Who's to say we didn't?"
shouted Ridcully, tapping the side of his nose conspiratorially.
Someone
began. Ridcully didn't even look round.
"Shut up, Mr. Stibbons," he said.
"Shutting up, sir."
"Can you hear that thunder?" said Ridcully as a rumble rolled across the city. "We'd better take cover."
The clouds above the tower were rising like water against a dam. Ponder said afterwards the fact that the BU tower was very short and extremely tall at the same time might have been the problem, since the storm was trying to go around it, over it, and through it, all at the same time. From the ground, the clouds seemed to open up slowly, leaving a glowing, spreading chimney filled with the blue haze of electrical discharges, and pounced. One solid blue bolt hit the tower at every height all at once, which is technically impossible. Pieces of wood and corrugated iron roared into the air and rained down across the city. Then there was just a sizzling and the rushing of rain. The crowd stood up again, cautiously, but the fireworks were over.
"That's what we call lightning," said Ridcully.
Arch-Chancellor Rincewind got up and tried to brush mud off his robe, then found out why you cannot do this.
"It's not usually as big as that, though," Ridcully went on.
"Oh, good."
There was a clank from the steaming debris where the tower had stood, and a sheet of metal was pushed aside. Slowly, with much mutual aid and many false starts, two blackened figures emerged. One of them was still wearing a hat, which was on fire, although the rain was putting out the flames. Leaning against one another, weaving from side to side, they approached the wizards. One of them said,
"Ook,"
very quietly, and fell backwards. The other one looked blearily at the two arch-chancellors and saluted. This caused a spark to leap from its fingers and burn its ear.
Rincewind, it said.
And what have you been up to while we've been doing all this hard work, pray? Said Ridcully.
Rincewind looked around very slowly. Occasional little blue streaks crackled in his beard.
Well, that all seemed to go pretty well, really, all things considered, he said,
and fell full length into a puddle. It rained. And after that, it rained. Then it rained some more. The clouds were stacked like impatient charter flights over the coast, low on fuel, jockeying for position, and raining. Above all, raining. Flood water roared down the rocks and scoured out the ancient muddy water holes. A species of tiny shrimps, whose world for thousands of years had been one small hole under a stone, were picked up and carried wholesale into a lake that was spreading faster than a man could run. There had been fewer than 1,000 of them. There were a lot more next day. Even if the shrimps had been able to count how many, they were far too busy to bother. In the new estuaries, rich in sudden silt and unexpected food, a few fish began the experiment of a salt-free diet. The mangroves started their stop-motion conquests of the new mudbanks. It went on raining. Then it rained some more. After that, it rained. It was some days later. The ship rose and fell gently by the dock. The water around it was red with suspended silt, in which a few leaves and twigs floated.
"A week or two to No Thing Fjord, and we're practically home," said Ridcully.
"Practically on the same continent, anyway," said the Dean.
"Quite an interesting long vacation, really," said the lecturer in recent runes.
"Probably the longest ever," said Ponder. "Did Mrs. Whitlow like her stateroom?"
"I, for one, will quite enjoy bunking down in the hold," said the senior wrangler loyally.
"The bilges, actually," said Ponder. "The hold's full of opals, beer, sheep, wool, and bananas."
"Where's the librarian?" said Ridcully.
"In the hold, sir."
"Yes. I suppose it was silly of me to ask. Still, nice to see him his old self again."
"I think it may have been the lightning, sir. He's certainly very lively now."
And Rincewind sat on the luggage down on the dock. Somehow he felt something should be happening. The worst time in your life was when nothing much was going on, because that meant that something bad was about to hit you, for some strange reason. He could be back in the university library in a month or so, and then, whew, for a life of stacking books. One dull day after another, with occasional periods of boredom. He could hardly wait. Every minute not being a minute wasted was, well, a minute wasted. Excitement? That could happen to other people. He'd watched the merchants loading the ship. It was pretty low in the water, because there would be so many Exian things the rest of the world wanted. Of course, it had come back light, because it was hard to think of any bloody thing it could bloody import that was better than any bloody thing in XXXX. There were even a few more passengers willing to see the world, and most of them were young.
"Hey, aren't you one of the foreign wizards?"
The speaker was a young man carrying a very large knapsack topped by a bedroll. He seemed to be the impromptu leader of a small group of similarly overloaded people, with wide open faces and slightly worried expressions.
"You can tell, can't you?" said Rincewind. You wanted something?"
"Do you think we can buy a cart in this place? No Thing Fjord?"
"Yes, I should think so.
Only me and Clive and Shirl and Gerline were thinking of picking up one and driving to..."
He looked around.
"Ankh Morpork," said Shirl. "Right. And then selling it and getting a job for a while. Having a look round, you know, for a while. That'd be right."
Rincewind glanced at the others trooping up the gangplank. Since the invention of the dung beetle, which had in fact happened not too far away, it was probable that no creature had ever carried so much weight.
"I can see it catching on," he said.
"No worries. But,
"Yes, mate?"
"Do you mind not humming that tune? It was only a sheep, and I didn't even steal it."
Someone tapped him on the shoulder. It was Neelette. Letitia and Darlene were standing behind her, grinning. It was 10 in the morning. They were wearing sequined evening gowns.
"Bad Jap," she said, and settled down beside him. "We just thought, well, we've come to say, you know, thanks and everything. Letitia and Darlene are coming in with me, and we're going to open up the brewery again."
Rincewind glanced up at the ladies.
"'I've had enough beer thrown at me. "'I ought to know something about it,' said Letitia, "'although I do think we could make it a more attractive colour. "'It's so,' she waved a large, beringed hand, irritably, "'aggressively masculine.'
"'Pink would be nice,' said Rincewind. "'And you could put in a pickled onion on a stick, perhaps.'
"'Bloody good suggestion,' said Darlene, "'slapping him so hard on the back that his hat fell over his eyes.
"'You wouldn't like to stay,' said Neelet. "'You look like someone with ideas.'
"'Rincewind considered this attractive proposition, and then shook his head.
"'It's a nice offer, but I think I ought to stick to what I do best,' he said.
"'But everyone says you're no good at magic,' said Neelet.
"'Yes. Well, being no good at magic is what I do best,' said Rincewind. "'Thanks all the same.'
"'At least let me give you a big, wet, sloppy kiss,' said Darlene, grabbing his shoulders.
Out of the corner of his eye, Rincewind saw Neelet's foot stamped down.
All right,' said Darlene, letting go and hopping away. "'It wasn't as if I was going to bite him, miss.'
Neelet gave Rincewind a peck on the cheek.
"'Well, drop in whenever you're passing,' she said.
"'Certainly will,' said Rincewind. "'I'll look for the pubs with the mauve umbrellas outside, shall I?'
Neelet gave him a wave, and Darlene made an amusing gesture as they walked away, almost bumping into a group of men in white. One of them shouted,
"'Hey, there he is! Sorry, ladies.'
"'Oh, hello, Charlie. Ron,'
said Rincewind as the chefs bore down on him.
"'Heard you wazzers was leaving,' said Ron. "'Wouldn't be fair to let you go without shaking you by the hand,' Charlie said. "'The peach Nelly went down a treat,'
said Charlie, beaming proudly.
"'Glad to hear it,' said Rincewind. "'Good to see you looking so cheerful.'
"'It gets better,' said Ron. "'There's a new soprano just been taken on, "'and she's a winner if I'm any judge. "'No, Charlie, you tell him her name.' "'Germaine Trifle,' said Charlie.
"'A wider grin would have resulted in the top of his head slipping off.
"'I'm very happy for you,' said Rincewind. "'Start whipping that cream right now, you hear?'
"'Ron patted him on the shoulder.'
"'We could always do with another hand in the kitchens,' he said. "'Just say the word, mate.'
"'Well, it's very kind of you, and when I pull another tissue out of a box, "'I'll always remember you blokes at the Opera House, but—'
"'There he is!'
"'The jailer and the captain of the guard were jogging along the quay. "'The jailer was waving encouragingly at him.
"'Nah, it's all right. You don't have to run,' he shouted. "'We got a pardon for you.'
"'Pardon?'
said Rincewind.
"'That's right.'
The jailer reached him and fought for breath.
"'Signed by the Prime Minister,' he managed. "'Says you're a good bloke, and we're not to hang you.'
He straightened up.
"'Mind you, we wouldn't do that anyway, not now. Best bloody escape we've ever bloody had since Tin Head Ned.'
Rincewind looked down at the writing on the official lined prison notepaper.
"'Oh, good,' he said weakly. "'At least someone thinks I didn't steal the damn thing.'
"'Oh, everyone knows you stole it,' said the jailer happily. "'But after that escape, well, and the chase, eh? "'Bluey here says he's never seen anyone run like you, and that's a fact.'
"'The guard punched Rincewind playfully on the arm.
"'Good on you, mate,' he said, grinning. "'But we'll catch you next time.'
"'Rincewind looked blankly at the pardon.
"'You mean I'm getting this for being a good sport?'
"'No worries,' said the jailer. And there's a queue of farmers saying if you want to steal one of their sheep next time, that'd be bonza, just so long as they get a verse in the ballad.
Rincewind gave up.
What can I say, he said. You keep one of the best condemned cells I've ever stayed in, and I've been in a few.
He looked at the glow of admiration in their faces and decided that since fortune had been kind, it was time to give something back.
I'd take it kindly, though, if you'd never, ever redecorate that cell.
"'Nah worries. Here, I thought we ought to give you this,' said the jailer, handing him a little gift-wrapped package. "'Got no use for it now, eh?'
Rincewind unwrapped the hempen rope.
"'I'm lost for words,' he said. "'How thoughtful. I'm bound to find lots of uses for it. "'And what's this? Sandwiches?'
"'You know that sticky brown stuff you made? "'Well, all the lads tried it, and they all went, "'Look! And then—' "'They all wanted some more, so we tried cooking up a batch,' said the jailer. "'I was thinking of going into business. You don't mind, do you?'
"'No worries. Be my guest.
Good on ya.'
Someone else wandered up as he watched them hurry away.
"I heard you were going back," said Bill Rincewind. "Want to stay on here? I had a word with your dean. He gave you a bloody good reference."
"Did he? What did he say?"
"He said if I could get you to do any work for me, I'd be lucky," said Bill.
Rincewind looked around at the city glistening under the rain.
"It's a nice offer," he said, "but, oh, I don't know, all this sun, sea, surf and sand wouldn't be good for me, thanks all the same."
"You sure?"
"Yes."
Bill Rincewind held out his hand.
"No worries," he said. "I'll send you a card at Hogswatch and some bit of clothing that doesn't fit properly. I'd better get back to the university now. I've got all the staff up on the roof mending the leaks."
And that was it. Rincewind sat for a while watching the last of the passengers get aboard and took a final look around the rain-soaked harbour. Then he stood up.
"Come on, then," he said.
The luggage followed him up the gangplank and they went home. It rained. The flood gurgled along ancient creek beds and overflowed, spreading out into a lacework of gullies and rivulets. Further rain ensued. Near the centre of the last continent, where waterfalls streamed down the flanks of a great red rock that steamed with the heat of a 10,000-year summer, a small, naked boy sat in the branches of a tree, along with three bears, several possums, innumerable parrots, and a camel. Apart from the rock, the world was a sea. And someone was wading through it. He was an old man carrying a leather bag on his back. He stopped waist-deep in swirling water and looked up at the sky. Something was coming. The clouds were twisting, spinning, leaving a silvery hole all the way up to the blue sky, and there was a sound that you might get if you took a roll of thunder and stretched it out thin. A dot appeared, growing bigger. The man raised a skinny arm, and suddenly it was holding an oval of wood that trailed a cord, which hit his hand with a slap. The rain stopped. The last few drops hammered out a little rhythm that said, "Now we know where you are, we'll be coming back." The boy laughed. The old man looked up, caught sight of him, and grinned. He tucked the bull roarer into the string around his waist and took up a boomerang painted in more colours than the boy had ever seen in one place together. The man tossed it up and caught it a couple of times, and then, glancing sideways to make sure his audience was watching him, he hurled it. It rose into the sky and went on climbing, long past the point where any normal thing should have started to fall back. It grew bigger, too. The clouds parted to let it through, and then it stopped, as if suddenly nailed to the sky. Like sheep, which having been driven to a pasture can now spread out at their leisure, the clouds began to drift. Afternoon sunlight sliced through into the still waters. The boomerang hung in the sky, and the boy thought he would have to find a new word for the way the colours glowed. In the meantime, he looked down at the water and tried out the word he'd been taught by his grandfather, who'd been taught it by his grandfather, and which had been kept for thousands of years for when it would be needed. It meant the smell after rain. It had, he thought, been well worth waiting for. That is the end of The Last Continent. It was written by Terry Pratchett and read by Nigel Planer.
This has been an ISIS audiobooks production. Please write or phone on 01865 250333 for details of our extensive range of unabridged audiobooks.